So now I'd like to welcome Bill Svoboda. Did I say that right, Bill? Well, you tell us when you come up here. So in 2004, at the age of 21, Bill founded his first company, CodeMonkey.com, an online custom t-shirt company, and he did this out of his college dorm room. Now, with over 10 years of e-commerce experience, Bill is not only passionate about selling soft, custom printed t-shirts to clients across the country, from Google and Facebook to colleges and nonprofits, but creating a company that sets the bar for online customer care. Bill is also the co-founder of Close Simple, a software that helps with communication during the title and escrow process, creating streamlined communication for thousands of home closings per month. Along with these businesses and a couple other fun side projects that we'll probably hear something about, Bill is also completing his first book. You Don't Need to Advertise a Good Party is the title of the book. Sounds like a fun read. And he's a passionate speaker on the topic of both entrepreneurism and customer engagement. So please give a Unity Foundation welcome, please, to Bill.
When the rebels overthrew the government, the rebels yelled, "Freedom, freedom," but "Svoboda, svoboda." So when they overthrew the government, they took freedom as their actual name. So svoboda. So if I ever go over to Eastern Europe, Russia, Ukraine, any of those countries, literally my name, people go, "Do you know what that, I'm a celebrity." So you can tell your friends, like, an Eastern European celebrity came today to Alexander to speak to you. They won't know why I'm a celebrity or anything, but you can say his name like that.
Bill Freedom.
Yeah, that's it. Today, I'm excited to talk with you here today. I came from Minneapolis. I'm in Alexander. This is actually my first time in Alexander. I'm so excited. I've driven through it to St. Cloud. I've driven to Fargo, Alexandria. I've never been here, so this is a real privilege to be here with you all today. I'm excited to talk with you about this topic. I call this speech, "You Don't Need to Advertise a Good Party." You don't need to advertise a good party. If you're taking notes, feel free to write, I'm gonna give you stuff. You might wanna take notes. So if you have a notebook, take notes there. If you have your phone, do it on your phone. I know you're not texting, you're just taking notes on your note app. And if you don't have a notebook, a phone, feel free to use your neighbor's arm. That's also a good thing. If they're your husband or wife, you can take it home with you. Don't leave them here. That's always good. I want to start by just talking about this idea, typewriters. How many of you grew up on a typewriter? The hands go up like crazy. This room is full of typewriter users. I remember my first experience with a typewriter. My first experience with a typewriter was in fourth grade. My first time having to do an actual report in class. Back in fourth grade, I'm sure, as all of you remember, when you're starting to learn the typewriter, you're not fluent like this. You're not like dancing on the keys. It's more like bing, 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 bing. Where's Q again? Over there. Fourth grade was my first experience with a typewriter, and it was amazing. I remember I had a take-home report, wrote it all. It took me days to write this report. And I mean, I went through those little white strips. Those little white strips that if you make an error, you backspace, hope you line it up right, or else you get docked by your teacher because it wasn't good enough. Then you put the little white strip in, redo the letter that you made a mistake, and then you realize you typed the wrong letter, so you have to redo both letters. But I remember typewriters. What a crazy, the typewriter. It was huge. It sat on my kitchen table. My mom would bring it up whenever we had a report, and she'd be like, Billy, we have an hour till dinner. You need to get done with this, and then we'll eat dinner and we'll bring it back up. But I also remember the day that the computer came into my life. Do you all remember the computer? The day, your first computer. Who remembers your first computer? First computer. For me, my first computer was literally seventh grade. I remember the day vividly. Because the day it was huge, it was at night. My dad's IT guy at his company came over and installed the computer. And it was an event. We had a pizza party. Like, literally, my parents ordered in pizza for this. And me and my brothers were so excited for this computer. We didn't know what a computer would do, except that it was cool and you could probably play games on it. And we heard all about a computer. I was in seventh grade. My brother was in third or fourth. The other one was like first or second. So for a seventh grader and for elementary kids, getting a computer was like the coolest thing because it had games on it. I remember, though, that night that we got the computer, the pizza party marked it, and afterwards, all we wanted to do was play games. But we figured out we have to install games, and we didn't have any games, so we just sat there looking at it, going, this is awesome. We don't know what to do with it, but it's amazing. That night, though, also marked the night that the typewriter got taken and put away for the last time. My mom took this big bag, and she zipped it up, because by that time, 3 years later, you know, I've been using the typewriter, I'm fluent in it, I can kind of dance on the keys. We had a special spot in the house for the typewriter, which was now the computer spot. And my mom took it, zipped up this big bag, and she took it downstairs. And the interesting thing with that was, we haven't seen the typewriter for years. We have not seen the typewriter for years. Until recently, my family, my mom and dad, just decided they were going to sell their house. And in selling their house, what did they find in the basement? The typewriter. What are we going to do with the typewriter, though? Let's just get rid of the typewriter. And what I find interesting about the typewriter is this. In one decade, literally in one decade, the typewriter became obsolete. Obsolete, like, who uses a typewriter anymore? If you use a typewriter anymore, I'd love to talk to you after and find out what you're using it for. There are still people who use a typewriter, but we don't use typewriters anymore, we use a computer. In one decade, though, the typewriter was completely obsolete. And my question, kind of this topic that I want to breach today a little, is, this idea of relevancy, this idea of relevancy. One day, did the typewriter industry just decide we're gonna roll over and die? You know, like, did the typewriter industry, you know, the guys in the big tower that controlled all the typewriters go, you know what, I think this is a good decade for us just to call it quits. No, they were busy selling typewriters, they were busy servicing typewriters, they were busy keeping our fingers going fast and selling those little white strips for when we have mistakes. So today, I don't think the question that I want to focus on, because this is a room full of business owners, full of managers, full of people who are just coming to talk about the marketplace and our faith interacting. I want to focus on this idea, not so much of how do we increase our sales, not so much how do we even keep our customers better. I think you can have multiple speakers who can come in and talk about that a lot better. What I want to focus on today is this idea of relevancy, and per the typewriter industry, like, will we be relevant in a year from now? Will we be relevant in 5 years? Will we even be in the same industry in 10 years? Because I think relevancy is a real big issue. Over the past decade, 20 years, we've seen literally industries change. Remember going on a Friday night to Blockbuster Videos? How many remember Blockbuster client video? Like, that was a Friday night for me. Dad would go, hey, we're gonna rent a movie tonight. You know, and us boys and mom would cram in the car. Go, which movie do we want? Dad would just let us loose in Blockbuster and we come back with like 4 or 5 movies and be like, no, that one is not one that you're gonna watch. Your mom will not let it. We'll sneak that by her though. You know, but Blockbuster, who would have known that Netflix would completely change Blockbuster? But I remember I didn't even use Netflix right away. I didn't want to get a DVD in the mail. But who could imagine that Netflix even by saying, we'll mail you a DVD, now you don't even have DVDs in the mail with Netflix. Now it's just streaming on your computer. Now you can't imagine going to a movie store anymore. I also look at something like the financial industry. In the 1980s, think of a financial broker, like a stockbroker. If I wanted to buy 300, I'll just throw out XYZ stock. If I wanted to buy 300 XYZ stock, what would I do? I'd get on the phone with the stockbroker and go, hey, Jim. Hey, how's your family doing? Yeah. Hey, I want to buy 300 XYZ stock. Where can I come? Awesome. Talk to you in a month. You know, whatever. When the internet came around, though, Who's calling their stockbroker anymore? Nobody. We don't need a stockbroker. We go to E-Trade, $7 trades. What do we go to anybody in that industry for now? We go to them for advice. It's completely changed. Stockbrokers, they're not around anymore. Are they still relevant? They had to change completely. I also look at websites. I've talked to a few of you in the room today, business owners. I remember my first website cost so much money. I had to literally take like a credit card, a line of credit out. I had to think about like, do I need to donate an arm to afford this thing? Like literally websites used to cost $100,000, $200,000, tens of thousands minimum. Now you can literally hop online and build a website for free and have it up tonight. If you want to pay $29.99 a month, you can have a better site. The web industry has completely changed, and companies that have literally gone, we're going to build our business off of $100,000 websites, are going, where are we going now? Where are we going? I really think this idea of relevancy, industries have it, and we all face this idea. I think there's always this pressure of how do we stay relevant, though? So again, today I'm not going to talk about how to get bigger close on a deal. I'm not going to talk about how to keep customers better. I'm not going to talk about how to engage better with customers. I want to just dig into this topic of relevancy. How do you stay relevant, and how do you innovate in an industry? And I realize some of you in this room today might not even be in the workforce, but applying this to your relationships. I think this is a big thing because relevant, I think part of the reason why we even post on Facebook or Instagram or why we do half of the stuff we do online isn't so much to brag, it's just to be like, hey, people, I'm still here. Do you care? I mean, how many times you post something, 5 minutes later, go, I wonder how many likes I got. I wonder if that person liked it, you know? We're hoping that we're staying in somebody else's peripheral. How much do they care about us? I think this all boils down to this idea of caring for people. If we're talking about relevancy, how do we stay relevant? I think it boils down to this idea of how are we caring for people. Because if you want to know the one thing that never goes out of style, it's caring for people. Throughout all the ages, caring for people has never changed. That's one trait that I don't care if you were selling typewriters and you moved on to computers to anything else. Caring for people has never gone out of style, and I think that's a foundational point of what we're going to talk about today, about how to stay relevant. Because it's so easy in our world today, just like the typewriter salesman, to view this relationship on a transaction level, where I'm just focused on selling you a typewriter. I'm never looking past you. I'm only looking at you as a sale. I'm not looking past you going, what's this guy need in the future? If it's a transactional level and not a care level, but I'm helping you get where you want to go, we're dead in the water. Our industry, our relationships are going to change. So I really believe this idea of relevancy is a big idea that can change, and caring is foundational. Because if you care more, I really believe people will share more. And like I called my book, you don't need to advertise a good party. Why? Because it advertises itself. A good party advertises itself. You get the right people to the right party, it works. And I think that's one of the ways that you stay relevant. So today, I want to outline three things, just three topics, three bullet points that I think we can take away in terms of how to stay relevant, how to avoid becoming obsolete in a world that's always changing, in a world that's always innovative. And then I want to tie it back at the end with why I believe that as Christians, we should be people that are innovating and be more relevant than anybody else in this world. So that's kind of what I want to go through. To begin with this, though, I started talking about typewriters. And that's something we don't use anymore. I want to talk about something now, first point, that every one of us in this room hopefully uses. Laundry detergents. Laundry detergents. You wash your clothes and you have laundry detergent. Downy, back in the day, the whole laundry detergent industry was up in arms. They didn't know how to get new customers. Laundry detergents were going after laundry detergents. One was saying, we have whiter whites. The other one was saying, brighter brights. Anybody in the room remember whiter whites, brighter brights commercials? Whiter whites. No, we have brighter brights. Then they'd say, we have whiter whites too. And then person after person, company after company, branding, we have better, we have better, we have whiter, we have brighter, we have whiter, we have brighter. Downy, though, decided, you know what? We're going to step back. This is a game that we cannot win. Everybody's saying the same thing. We can only say we have whiter whites for so long before the next guy says it louder than us. The ad budget's bigger. Downy step back and they go, you know what? I wonder what customers actually want. Does anybody even care about whiter whites? Does anybody even care about brighter brights? Like, that's a big question to step back. If this is your industry and you're this close from laundry detergent every day, you're looking at it going, this is all customers care about. Whiter whites, brighter brights. That's what everybody's talking about. Downey goes, time out. We're going to step back and we're going to think about this. We're going to actually talk to customers. Downey found something that was literally remarkable and a game changer in the whole industry. After talking to countless people, they found that, you know what? The average consumer could care less about whiter whites and brighter brights. You know what people in the industry actually cared about? In this day, the housewives that were doing the laundry, they cared about when they took the laundry out, how did it feel and how did it smell? How did it feel and how did it smell? Because they would actually watch people when they took the laundry out. How remarkable is that? Like, they would actually watch people as they took their laundry out, and they realized that one of the biggest things was, Downey goes, wait, everything's wrong about this. Nobody cares about whiter whites, brighter brights. Everybody cares about how soft is this and does it smell good. So Downey gets this idea, we're going to just stop talking about all that stuff. We're only going to talk about what customers actually care about. We're going to pivot our entire business. Everybody else is over there, we're going to change the rules of the game. I think that's a huge thing, like when you change the rules of the game and go, you know what, that's what everybody else is doing, we're going to own this area. If you want the softest and the best smelling when it comes out of the wash, if you want stuff that your kids will love to wear and that you'll feel proud giving to your husband or your wife, like, go with Downey. Go with Downey. And what did Downey do? They literally go, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And I come back to this idea of, are we so passionate about what we're selling that we're so close to it that we forget even what that customer is even thinking, what they really want? Are we selling them this idea of brighter brights, whiter whites, when the customer in their head are going like, that's awesome, I hear that every day. I'm waiting for you to tell me something different. I don't really care about that anymore. I think in the industry, in each of our lives, in each of our relationships, people are looking for something different. Are we so tied into this rut of giving what everybody else has been giving that we're never offering anything that people truly want? When Downey found out what people actually wanted, everything changed. The reason we know Downey today is because softer and better smelling. Softer and better smelling. There's no way to do this, though, if we view customers and people as a transaction. If we view our relationship in life as a broker, literally, I give you this, you give me this money, thank you very much, I'll see you in a month. When you need more money. When you need more laundry detergent, all of a sudden this person becomes a transaction. I'm never thinking about them as a person. This idea of care more. I call this point, please take the cape off. Please take the cape off. Please take the cape off. In life, think about this. When you woke up this morning, who is the star of your story? Who's the star of your story? It's you. It's you. She just nodded her head. She's like, it's me. You're the star of your story. Yet in business, and often as we're going through life, everybody else is the star of their own story too. Yet we're always trying to win them over and be the hero of their story. Nobody wants you to win their story for them. Everybody in this room, you care about, you woke up this morning, you're going, I want to win this day. Now we have God in our lives, so it's not about us alone, but at the heart of what we're doing, we're going, I want to provide for my family. I want to be there for my wife, my husband, my kids. I want to provide for my business. I want to win that sale. In our gut, where we motivate from, we are the hero of our stories. I think this is a crazy concept. What if we simply started looking at people as people and cared more about what they want to go to, took the cape off of ourselves and go, like, I'm going to help you get where you want to go. I want to help you get where you want to go. Downey, when they realized what housewives wanted, they put the cape on the housewife and they said, let's soar together. I think it's a freeing thing to realize we're not the hero. All we are is the helper. All we are is the helper. If you want to figure out how to stay relevant in somebody's life, whether it's your employees, your customers, your kids, your grandkids, whatever that relationship is, your significant other, stop viewing yourself as the hero to all their needs and start going, let me help you get where you want to go. Have you ever had one of those DTR conversations with a potential customer or somebody close to your life and go, what do you actually want in life? Like, where do you want to go? Like, what does this look like? I always find it fascinating whenever I get asked for coffee dates, like coffee and business. People are like, hey, can I pick your brain about business? Can I pick your brain about this? The people that stand out most to me, whenever they're trying to sell me something, whenever they're pitching, I've heard the sales pitches over and over, but I'm fascinated by the ones that go like, hey, where do you want to be in 5 years? That's never a question they ask. Why? Because they view me as, how much money do I have in my pocket that's going to get in their pocket? But when they start turning and going, where do you want to go? Hey, can my thing even help you get there? Everything changes. You know what? We love talking about ourselves, right? You're your own favorite topic of conversation. Like, I could ask you all day, like, hey, tell me about that t-shirt. Like, how'd you choose that? And I guarantee you could probably tell me why you chose it, whether it was just the only white one available when I opened the drawer, it was the only clean one. Or I'd be like, dude, my mom got me this for Christmas. It's my favorite shirt. Look how it makes my biceps look big. You know, whatever it is. Like, we can be the topic. We are our own favorite topic. Believe it or not, like, we are. And I think it's time for us to take the cape off and put it on somebody else. Like, if we can look at ourselves as helpers, not heroes, just helping somebody along that journey, how much better will we stay in their life? The typewriter salesman, let's just go back to that poor man. And I'm sorry if any of you in this room are a typewriter salesman. I hope that life has given you better cards since typewriters. But this idea of, if you're only concerned with selling typewriters, only concerned with this next transaction instead of the person that's buying it, where are they going, you're going to be outdated. You're going to be outdated. It's only, what can I get out of you? I think that's the first point of this idea of, how do we stay relevant? It's never been about you. It's always been about them. It's always been about your customer. It's always been about your significant other. It's always been about your grandkids. It's always been about your kids. It's always been about those people in your life that you see every day behind the barista station. It's always been about, hey, how's your day going? That's the person that people look forward to seeing. That's the person that will get a call from any day and you'll pick it up. Why? Because you care about people. And I think that's one of the biggest things. We could talk all day about how do we win new customers or keep new customers, send more thank you notes, anything like that, or invite them to more awesome events like this. I think at the bottom line, it's how much do we actually listen to them? Just how much do we listen to people? How much do we listen? Can we move from being a broker to an advisor, from a broker to a consultant, from a broker, someone who just does this, to somebody that goes, let me help you get there. Let me help you get there. I think that changes everything. I think that changes everything. That's the thing that's changed my business. That's what's gotten me to where I am. Literally, by just stopping and thinking about, I'm not selling t-shirts, I'm helping your event go better. Tell me, what are you looking for? I don't want to sell you junk. I want to make you feel proud that you chose our company. I want to make you feel proud. First point, take your cape off. Please, take your cape off. Nobody needs another superhero in their life. Everybody is their own hero of their day. Second point, I want to hit on this idea of, we always talk about innovation and disruption and being relevant, and how do we do that? And we always think we need to innovate or we need to do something brand new. I think often, it's just we need to execute better. I just think we need to be consistent. I think we need to just keep going and stop letting people down. I think that's part of it. There's always going to be some new shiny thing. There's going to be a new shiny object. I talk to a lot of real estate agents. And in real estate, this is probably one industry that gets more pressure than anybody. Brandon's in the back. Real estate agents are constantly being told, hey, you're not going to be relevant in the next 2 years. Technology is going to push you aside. Hey, to avoid being interrupted, you know, to keep your job, use this shiny object. You got to get on Zillow. Hey, get on this thing right here. You need Facebook ads. You're not spending $1,000 a month on Facebook. What are you doing? Do you even care? My point is this. Stop chasing shiny objects. And, like, just stop chasing them. Start chasing people. Like, literally, stop chasing all the things that are so shiny and attractive and take up so much of our busy hours. I heard one speaker say, your calendar is you. Tom Petters, years ago, your calendar is you. If you look at your calendar, you're going to see who you really are. If your day, your life is spent chasing shiny opportunities, shiny things over here, over there, this new fad that should yield you more clients besides just going after the clients, when that thing leaves, where are the clients that they promised you? When these things that are supposed to yield us that result leave, all we're left with is ourselves and hopefully people around us. My point in this is stop chasing shiny objects. Start chasing people. There's always going to be a new way to market yourself. There's always going to be a new way to stay relevant. But you never stop being relevant when you have people in that picture one handshake away. Literally, technology only makes things better. It's not a replacement. And no matter how much people say this to you, I run two businesses that are online, and my best customers are people that I literally have email and conversations with and meet in person. I don't care how much it is, because you know that when your credit card gets charged twice, I don't care if you've never met the company in your life. When your company gets charged, when your card gets charged twice, and you call customer care, and they go, "Oh, we can't do anything about it," you don't care about that company anymore. You go, "Forget you. Like, I'm canceling my subscription. I'm canceling." I don't think we have to think about a handshake. We need to think about when somebody reaches out to us, though, how receptive are we? Because it's impossible to have this anymore, because we're always connected online. But how much are we truly caring about customers? The second point, I love this idea. I call it the Tom Ford, but how does my butt look in these jeans? Tom Ford, how does my butt look in these jeans? Tom Ford is one of my favorite designers. Tom Ford, if you're unfamiliar with Tom, he's a guy, he's literally redone men's fashion. Probably one of the most cutting edge names in fashion also. He started at Gucci. He redid Gucci completely. Gucci up till the 90s was all about brown, and Tom Ford goes, "No, brown is not relevant anymore. It's all about black. It's all about sleek. So Gucci, forget the brown, it's all black." Tom Ford goes, this was his biggest name, this was his biggest claim to fame. He goes, "Men, this was in the early 2000s when suits were all getting skinnier. Remember the skinny suits up here? Like when everything was getting really small and the skinny ties?" Tom Ford looked at the state of men's fashion and he goes, "No, no, no, this is so wrong. Men do not deserve skinny ties and skinny suits and everything that way. They deserve wide lapels. Their lapels should be wide. When they walk into a room, they should command attention." His number one goal when he started his line of clothing, Tom Ford, whose suits are about $5,000, a $5,000 suit, his whole goal when he started Tom Ford was this: to give men a fighting chance to walk down the red carpet next to a woman. That was his whole goal to starting a fashion line. He goes, "Women get all the attention. I'm going to give men the spotlight, finally. I'm going to give men the spotlight, finally." So he makes, in his mind, the best suit. He makes the lapels wider. Tom Ford has this line, though, that I absolutely love. I love this. He goes, "Marketing is used for hollow products that don't really speak for themselves, and marketing is the only way you can sell them. But when they come in the store, if they don't put on a pair of pants, and if their butt doesn't look good, no matter how much marketing you've done, they're walking out of that store. They're not buying those pants." I think today, more than ever, it's time for us in this room to start caring more, not only about our customers, but what we're making. I think you can do all the great marketing in the world. You can have all the shiny objects. That's what I say. Avoid the shiny objects. Focus on making something people care about. I made the mistake a few months ago. I went into Tom Ford's store in New York City, the flagship store. You walk in and you know you're in a different world. I walked in and I went up to the shoe section and I tried on a pair of boots. These Tom Ford boots were unlike any pair of boots I've ever tried on. They cost $1,990. That's number one. Number two was they felt better on my feet than any shoe I've ever worn. And I'm 34 years old. I've worn a few pairs of shoes in my life. These boots felt remarkable. And his jeans looked amazing. And his jackets looked amazing. Everything Tom Ford did looked amazing. And I thought to myself, can I afford any of this? Should I afford any of it? Is it a better investment? No, just say no, Bill. But the thing was, Tom Ford has put so much craftsmanship into every little piece. When he said that men deserve wider lapels, what happened when you... Now, I guarantee you, when you're watching TV next time, you're going to look at the men's lapels on their suit. How wide is it? When you see the wide lapel, look at the credits and see if they're wearing Tom Ford. And if they're not wearing Tom Ford, they're wearing somebody else's copy, Tom Ford, now. But Tom Ford put so much craftsmanship into what he did that he goes, my products are going to stand on their own. My products are going to, marketing is going to be a supplement to this. That's going to add fuel to the fire. If I can't make something that when people put on it, they go, these are the best jeans I've ever worn. And these jeans are how much? 1,002 I'm walking out with them right now. These are amazing. I think in our lives, in our relationships, in what we're building as businesses, when we get back to this basic of caring more about the customer and literally giving the customer worth something worth caring about, When we can offer something worth caring about, we can stand on that when we do put marketing dollars behind it. When we do say, hey, that's a cool new little thing that I could try, let's see. But if I don't have something worth caring about, why in the world am I doing whatever I'm doing? I think it's the worst feeling in the morning if you've ever woken up and you realize whatever you're selling, you're not passionate about because it doesn't serve a need. I think it's time for us in this room, for us as Christians in the marketplace, to go, I'm going to care enough to offer things that people care about, to offer things that stand on their own, to offer things that literally speak for themselves. I love it, like little touches. There's a pair of shoes, a women's pair, Christian Louis Vuitton. I see one nod over there. What's unique about those? It's the red bottoms. When you see a pair of Christian Louis Vuittons walking on the street, and you see a girl raise her feet, you see the red bottoms, you go, oh boy, those are some real crap. Those shoes look amazing. It turns head. I really think that when we start thinking about in our businesses, in our relationships, I talk to small group leaders at churches, and I say, instead of just checking the box of, yes, I'm a small group leader, what if you actually poured your heart into it? What if you made something that the people that come to this literally go, I need to come back. I've been to small groups before. I'm never going to another small group. I'm going to that small group. That's the gold standard. And I guarantee you, like, I was spoiled when I put on those Tom Ford boots. I can never put on another pair of boots without thinking of those Tom Ford boots. I'm still thinking about it. Should I spend $1,990? No, I shouldn't. Literally, what if we set the standard? We cared more about our customers and we made things worth caring about. I think it goes back to the idea of you don't need to advertise a good party. Why? Because it advertises itself. The people going to it are your best marketing tool. Stop trying to get people and convince them and twist their arm to come to your party, to your business, and start making stuff that they can't help sharing. Start making things that they can't help going online saying, like, this is the best experience I've ever had. This person actually cared about me. This person actually cared. I think that really changes it. To illustrate this a little better, and even to tie it back to real estate, Brandon, as a real estate agent, one of the greatest things you could have, the best marketing, is a sold sign right in the front yard. When you see a sold sign right there, you know that that real estate agent gets their stuff done. They get it done. I got a buddy, he owns a Chinese shop, a little Chinese place. Best sesame chicken I've ever had. Willowgate 2. Don't go to Willowgate 1. Willowgate 2. It's in Roseville, Minnesota. And Dan started this place. And Dan is so anal on the details. He's poured hours into his sesame chicken, just the sesame chicken. Like, I told him, man, you've done your sesame chicken so well, you shouldn't offer anything but sesame chicken. I mean, it's crunchy on the outside, it's so tender on the inside. The sauce on the outside is like sweet, and everything about the sesame chicken and his fried rice. He heard from a customer that by the time they went from Roseville to Duluth, that his rice got hard, and if you ever had hard rice, it's not good. So Dan goes, I'm gonna fix that. So you know what he did? He built a pressure cooker. He literally built his own pressure cooker to make rice in, so it pulls all the moisture out, remains fluffy from Roseville to Duluth. It literally, your rice will stay fluffy and not become a rock from Roseville to Duluth. How great of a tagline is that? But Dan told me one day on his quest for the perfect sesame chicken, he goes, Bill, let me tell you how I got so good. Because I'd ask him, like, you know, why sesame chicken? He goes, here's why. Because when I see the plate come back and saw sesame chicken on it, I got to go back and make it better. I can't leave sesame chicken on the plate. If the customer doesn't eat it all, I'm not doing a good job. And I really think that's something, like, us in our jobs, in our relationships, like, we should always be looking and going, like, am I doing the job? Is this something? Can the customer literally take everything? They can't stop eating it. They can't stop taking it down. If there's sesame chicken left on the plate, there's something wrong. I got to go back and figure this out. I think this idea of customers, of people, are the greatest marketing tool the world's ever seen. I can't stop talking about Dan and his sesame chicken. I can't stop talking about my favorite $1,990 boots. I can't stop talking about things that I'm passionate about. We all have those things. And I think that's something that's incredible. And as believers, I think this all ties back to this idea of, do you remember in the Bible, like, how Jesus, whenever Jesus did a miracle, something incredible, I can't say whenever, because it wasn't every time that Jesus did one, but I just want to hit on three miracles Jesus did and point something out. This first miracle I want to hit on is this in Matthew 9. 9:27-34. Jesus literally heals two blind guys. He heals two blind guys. And what does he tell these two blind guys? He goes, hey, here, you're healed. What does he say? Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody about this. Don't tell anybody. And what does the Bible say after that? They went off and they told everybody. They told everybody. Mark 1:40-45, he heals a man with leprosy. And again, what does Jesus say? He goes, don't tell anybody about this. Don't tell anybody. What? Let me ask you something. Why would Jesus say, don't tell anybody? It wasn't because he was being like, hey, you're healed. Like, I want you to keep it to yourself. No, he was literally telling people that because literally back then when Jesus would go into a city, if he couldn't even walk in because the crowd was waiting for him, he couldn't go into the city. So in the third verse that I want to share in Luke 19:1-10, you can write these passages down. In Luke 19:1-10, Jesus heals, Mark 1:40-45, Jesus heals these guys, and it talks about how he can't even go into the cities anymore. He needs to stay outside of the cities because the crowds are so big. Because the people he's healing are literally telling everybody, and now the crowds are starting. When grace touches your life, like when you've experienced true grace, when you've realized, like, in myself, I can do nothing, and Jesus did everything, and it's all about him, it's not about me anymore. Like, this should just drip out of us. It goes back to this idea of you don't need to advertise a good party. Like, God cares so much for us. He made a perfect sacrifice, and we don't have to do anything. And literally, I don't think witnessing, I don't think evangelism, I don't think we need 10 steps or 3 steps. I think it's just like when grace rubs elbows with you and all of a sudden you come in contact with Jesus, like, it should be on your face. It's something that you don't have to pry it out and go like, hey, why are you like you are? Like, tell me your story. It's just literally Jesus did everything. I don't need to try anymore. I think that makes our life as Christians a lot easier. Remember, we're not the heroes. All we are is the helper showing them somebody who is the hero. I think that is the most powerful idea as Christians. We're not the heroes. We've never been. It's never been about us. It's always only ever been about Jesus, and it always only ever will be. It's never been about us. Luke 19:1-10. I just wanna read this one passage. This is Zacchaeus. And I wanna point this out. This is in verse 8. Now, Zacchaeus was the guy who went up in the tree and Jesus called him out. This is the first time Jesus ever goes, hey, I'm going to your house. Get down, I'm coming to your house. Jesus invited himself over to somebody's house. Like, how cool is that? Just goes, hey, your house tonight, I'm coming over. This is how amazing grace is when grace rubs elbows with you, when grace invades your life. And notice this, in this whole passage, Jesus never, go back and read this later, Jesus never goes, Zacchaeus, you're a tax collector, I can't believe what you're doing, you're horrible, you're rotten, you better change before I come to your house. He goes, I'm coming to your house tonight. What did Zacchaeus do? Literally, I'm going to read it, this is verse 8. But Zacchaeus stood up and said, Lord, Lord, here and now, I give half my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I'll pay back 4 times. Jesus didn't have to say, like, let me tell you 4 things wrong about you to get you to give back 4 times. Zacchaeus just goes, I can't believe this. What in the world? My whole life has changed. My whole life has changed. I think that's what grace looks like in our life. One last point that I'm going to leave you with, Psalm 23. One of my favorite verses in the Bible, Psalm 23. Often overlooked part of Psalm 23 is this idea of you anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life. When David's writing this, he's literally remembering back in the day when he got anointed as king. When you got anointed, you'd be on your knees and they'd pour oil over your head. It wasn't just this little dab of oil. It was literally a bath of oil. So now David's recalling this. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. So picture David, he just had tons of oil poured over him. The anointing oil, it smells like beautiful smell. It smells aromatic. The whole air, you can't miss this thing. And literally, he stands up, and now he's dripping. Okay, you anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life. When David stood up, think of this, he's covered in oil. He'd just been anointed, he's dripping. Everywhere he walks, you anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life. Everywhere he walked, that oil would literally drip off of him. He didn't have to go like this to get the oil to drip off of him. If he touched you, you'd get full of oil. I literally think that's what it looks like to be a believer in the marketplace. It's not, how do I turn this conversation? How do I say, I'm a Christian? No, it's literally just drips off of us. When we have God's anointing on our life, like when we are full of the Holy Spirit,
when we've been in his presence, you don't need to advertise a good party. It advertises itself. Literally, it just drips off of us. I've done this illustration before where I've literally poured water over somebody, and I've literally had them drenched, and I've had them walk around and give somebody a hug. I don't think I have to do that today. You get the point. You get the point. But what if our lives, what if we looked at how we look at our relationship with people, our customers, our business? What if we came out of the context of caring more? What if we came out of the context of making things worth caring about? What if we came out of the context of, it's already been done, all I'm here to do is serve you? I don't think that ever goes out of style. I don't think that ever goes out of style. We put our customers first, our relationships first, and always looking ahead of this sale, when that's where the market's going, let me help you get there. I don't want to sell you a typewriter, I want to sell you a solution. I don't want to just sell you this, I don't want to just be there tonight, I want to be there forever for you. Like, I think that changes everything. People care when you care. And you know, you don't need to advertise a good party, you advertise yourself. And you know what, one other thing? When you throw a good party, the neighbors always notice. Sometimes they call the cops. Thanks for having me, everybody.